It's time for What's Up with the Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
Morena, Chris Hipkins.
Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Now, just before we get into chatting about school lunches, the Hauraki Gulf and tobacco law reform, we've had a couple of questions come through from listeners of a fairly broad spread of topics, but if you're up for it, Chris, are you keen for a couple of questions from the listeners?
Fire away, why not?
Okay, question for Chris Hipkins. Does he think the government stepping into Wellington Council is an overreach, particularly given the entire coalition's pre-election rhetoric about less governmental interference? And is it a smokescreen for central government shifting costs to ratepayers, like the announcement that local councils will have to cover the cost of their road speed increases, approximately $30 million for Auckland alone?
Well, there's quite a lot in that question.
There is a lot in there.
I mean, ultimately, I think they are very close to overreach in the decisions they're taking around Wellington City Council. I mean, Wellington City Council, like a lot of other councils around the country, are struggling to finalise their long-term plan because the government has forced councils around the country to reopen long-term plan discussions because of the changes they've made around water infrastructure. So councils are now having to find the money to fix up their water infrastructure, whereas previously under the affordable water reforms that we had put in place as a government, they were not going to have to do that to the same extent that they are now. And so that's causing heartache for a lot of councils around the country. But also, this government are imposing more and more costs on local councils. Roading is one of the areas which you've just highlighted, which is a valid one, but there are plenty of others as well. And then basically just attacking councils and trying to make them into the bad guy, when actually in many cases the rates increases that councils are having to make are because of decisions that central government has taken.
All right, next question, Chris, from the listeners. The last Labor government spent up large without raising taxes. Government fiscal deficit got to 8% of GDP. Will the next Labor government do that again? Should there be a cap on fiscal deficit to GDP?
So, I mean, it's a bit more of a complicated picture than that. So a large proportion of the increase in debt, our debt to GDP ratio was caused during the COVID years when we were doing things like the wage subsidy and so on, and all of the parties in Parliament were arguing we should have done that. In fact, the National Party at the time were arguing we should have been spending more money on supporting businesses and so on through the COVID-19 response. And that actually accounts for a very large part of that increase in debt. The other part of it, well, there's three parts of it. The next part of it is extra spending for infrastructure. And I think all parties in Parliament need to face up to the fact that we've got a massive infrastructure deficit. And one of the ways we're going to have to fund that is by borrowing through debt funding so that we pay it off over the long term. And then the third is to cover basically a downturn in the economy, which has meant that the government books have flipped into deficit rather than into surplus. And, again, you can justify that in short term to sort of smooth out the bumps in the economy, but you can't be borrowing to fund day-to-day spending, on a long-term basis. And what the current government have done in cutting billions of dollars of tax revenue through the tax cuts is they've actually made the problem worse. We would be on path to be back into surplus again now if they hadn't delivered the billions and billions of dollars worth of tax cuts that they did.
Okay, and one last question from the listeners. Chris, John Key has said he'd vote for Trump, and I can only assume our current PM would think the same. Hypothetically, if the leader of the Democrats was a convicted felon with ties to Russia, would you vote for them?
Look, I mean, Donald Trump's not my cup of tea, and I wouldn't be voting for him. If he gets elected, then, of course, as New Zealanders, we need to work with him. But some of his policies I find morally repugnant, but also some of his policies would be quite detrimental to New Zealand. So things like imposing a 10% tariff on goods imported into the US, well, given New Zealand's a small exporting country and the US is one of our markets, that's not going to be great for New Zealand exporters.
All right. Hey, Chris, onto school lunches, which has been in the news the last couple of weeks. What's your stance on the nutritional adequacy of the new $3 school lunch meals, especially given concerns raised by school principals? And with the new program projected to save $130 million annually, how do you respond to people that say that lowering the costs may compromise the quality and healthiness of the meals provided to students?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to judge the new lunches yet before we've actually really seen them, because, of course, the samples that David Seymour was tasting the other day would have been freshly prepared on the day and no doubt made to look as attractive as possible. Let's see what happens when they actually show up, you know, at schools, having been mass-produced and then transported to the schools. And let's judge them based on that. I am sceptical, knowing, you know, some of the people involved, or some of the, you know, the firm involved here has also been involved in prison meals and hospital meals, which have not turned out to be particularly nutritious or particularly attractive for the people eating them. You know, I think the bigger issue here is they've cut something like $130 million from the school lunches program, and yet they gave over $200 million in a tax cut to Philip Morris, the largest tobacco company in New Zealand. I think that shows that their spending priorities are all wrong. You know, more money for cigarettes, less money for kids' lunches. I think that's a government with twisted priorities, frankly.
Do you believe that the government leveraging the private sector, quote, expertise, with companies like Compass Group NZ, do you believe that this is going to lead to better outcomes for students, or is there a risk of prioritising profit over the quality of the lunches?
Well, I mean, I think it's a question of which end of the private sector you want to talk about. Yeah. So many of the school lunch programs now were delivered by small businesses in local communities, and the government are taking that business away from them to give to a large multinational corporation. So if you actually want to prioritise New Zealand businesses and New Zealand workers, this government are doing the opposite of that. We had a partnership with a lot of local businesses that was creating a lot of local jobs, all of which are being cut by this government.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, Casey Costello has kind of been in the news again with the heated tobacco products, and you mentioned just before about the tax revenue, which has been lost or gifted to Philip Morris with recent excise tax cuts. Do you believe this change in policy is justified, especially in light of health risks associated with smoking and heated tobacco products? And when you look at some of the, I don't know, when you pair it up against school lunches, does this look like a smart decision from the government?
Oh, it's a terrible decision by the government. The health experts, the Ministry of Health and the other health experts who were advising the government, even the New Zealand Treasury, were saying that actually there's no evidence that this is going to improve health outcomes. In fact, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that this is a bad move. Casey Costello said, no, I've received independent advice. When asked to produce that independent advice, she produced some nonsense that she'd read on the internet. I would have thought that New Zealanders should be able to expect a higher standard from their ministers than, oh, well, I read something else on the internet.
Mm-hmm. With former New Zealand First officials now working for Philip Morris, how do you respond to concerns about potential conflicts of interest within the government regarding tobacco policy?
Oh, I think there are absolutely conflicts of interest within this government when it comes to tobacco policy. But that's not unique to New Zealand. The tobacco industry around the world are very good at weaseling their way into governments and into positions of influence. And I think we need to guard very jealously against that. The tobacco lobby shouldn't have the level of influence that it appears to have on this under this government.
All right. Now, just moving along to the Hauraki Gulf and the Marine Protection Bill, what is your response to the last-minute amendments allowing commercial fishing in high-protection areas of the Hauraki Gulf, Kawau Bay, and around Raakino?
Well, it's a massive broken promise by the National Party and the National Party's local members of Parliament in Auckland in particular. They supported the Hauraki Gulf protection legislation that we introduced. They were champions for it, and now they're basically watering it down and allowing commercial fishing. Mm. That's a direct contradiction with what they were arguing before the election.
Do you think the decision to permit ringnet fishing in protected areas will affect the overall health of the Hauraki Gulf ecosystem?
Of course it will, and there's a reason why we proposed the legislation we did, because we took advice on what you could and couldn't do if your focus was on protecting the environment. This government have made protecting the environment less of a priority, and therefore they've allowed things that we wouldn't have.
On to the national government's argument. How do you view the argument that this fishing method is necessary for providing affordable protein for local communities, especially Māori and Pacific Island communities?
I think they should speak to local iwi about that, and they'll find that there isn't the support for that that they think that there is, or they seem to claim that there is. Mm. And it's not like we're short of protein in New Zealand. Actually, we've got plenty of it.
Yes, plenty of beef and lamb and all that sort of stuff. Now, what role do you think the commercial fishing lobby played in influencing these last-minute changes to the Hauraki Gulf Moana Marine Protection Bill?
I have to be a little bit careful in the sense that if I'm going to make a claim that they've unduly influenced it, that I need to have some proof of that. But the government does have very close links with the fishing industry, and I think people can draw their own conclusions from that.
And what steps do you reckon should be taken to address concerns raised by scientists and environmental advocates about the potential impacts of this ring net fishing still taking place?
I think we should listen to the scientists. This government doesn't care of what scientists say. You see that in all aspects of government policy. You see that when we talk about climate change, where they're saying, oh, yes, we've got to tackle climate change, but have reversed every measure that the government was taking on climate change, or almost every measure, I should say. When it comes to issues around fishing, they're basically ignoring the science. When it comes to issues around things like crime and sort of other areas, you know, of social problems, they're just ignoring the science.
Mm-hmm. Now, capital gains tax is back in the news. There's been a new poll that shows 2/3 of New Zealanders support some forms of capital gains tax. How do you interpret this level of public support, and what does it mean for Labor's economic policy moving forward? Are you guys really going to lean into this and run on capital gains tax in the next general election?
I think what it shows is that New Zealanders can see that the current tax system is unfair, that we are placing too much of an emphasis on taxing salary and wage earners in New Zealand, and therefore people who make their money through other means, i.e. by buying and selling investment properties, aren't paying their fair share of tax. And so that is something that the Labor Party is looking very closely at. We haven't decided a tax policy yet, because with all tax policies, there's unintended consequences, and we want to work through all those carefully so that when we do announce what we're going to do, we've worked through all of the implications of it.
The survey, just on the investment property thing, the survey indicated that a significant majority support for capital gains tax on the sale of investment properties. Would Labor consider reintroducing this tax? It seems like a fairly surefire thing to do.
Well, the current government actually reduced taxes on capital gains from rental properties by reducing the bright line test from 10 years to 2 years. So we did have effectively a form of capital gains taxation for people buying and selling rental properties over a 10-year period. They've reduced that to only over a 2-year period. And that means that most people who are buying and selling rental properties won't pay any tax on the profit that they make out of doing that. So I think that was a bad decision. That was a big step backwards. Having said that, we haven't yet identified what we would do next time, because it won't be exactly the same as what we did last time.
The survey also mentioned that Labor is viewed as increasingly capable of managing key issues like education and healthcare. What specific steps will Labor take to enhance, public perception and demonstrate competency in economic management, particularly in relation to taxation?
I think if you look at the economic fundamentals of the time that we were in government, we actually kept record low unemployment despite the crisis of COVID-19. We did have the books in balance before the COVID crisis hit. Of course, the books went out of balance when we had to manage the country through a once-in-a-generation global health emergency. But we were focused on getting the books back into surplus again. This government are proposing, but I think, the largest spending cut in terms of government spending that any New Zealand government has ever proposed. That's going to have a significant economic impact. Mm. It's actually going to make our economic situation worse, not better.
And one last question for you, Chris. With the current government rejecting a capital gains tax as a means of economic growth, how does Labor plan to counter this narrative and advocate for tax reforms that could potentially benefit New Zealanders?
We need a tax system that encourages productive investment, and taxing salary and wage earners, whilst, at a higher degree, whilst effectively allowing people to make significant, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in capital and tax-free profits buying and selling rental properties, that's not a balanced tax system. So I think we do need to have an honest conversation about that as a country.
Excellent. Hey, Chris Hipkins, thank you so much for your time this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks. Cheers, mate.
No worries. Good as gold. Cheers.
That was What's Up with Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
Right, a couple of quick tunes, and then we'll have some news at the top of the hour for you.